The phone traffic was constant on February 22, 1998. First, a call would come from the satellite phone in Afghanistan. Then, after he finished that conversation, Khalid al-Fawaz would dial a local number in London, the offices of Al-Quds al-Arabi, an Arabic language daily. Then Afghanistan would call again. The back and forth began before noon and did not end until just about 6 in the evening, when Al-Quds called the 3-digit regional prefix and the 13-digit satellite phone number directly. The newspaper staffer spent half an hour on the line taking dictation. Satellite phones and journalism have gone hand in hand since before the Gulf War, when an army of reporters logging Inmarsats descended on Saudi Arabia and Iraq. But no journalist's copy had ridden a signal into the sky and back to Earth like the one printed in Al-Quds on the 23rd. The piece was actually not a story, but a fatwa. It declared that to kill the Americans and their allies, civilians and military, is an individual duty for every Muslim who can do it in any country in which it is possible to do it. Osama bin Laden had bought his satellite phone a year earlier, just after moving to Afghanistan, a country with no reliable telecommunications. The transmission of the fatwa, the declaration of jihad against Jews and Crusaders, marked the beginning of the final stage of an operation wholly worthy of the global age. The plans for bombing the American embassies in Nairobi and the Tanzanian capital Dar es Salaam were known respectively as Operation Kaaba, after the cubic structure at the center of the Grand Mosque in Mecca, the holiest site of Islam, and Operation Al-Aqsa, after the mosque in Jerusalem, that is the faith's third holiest spot. As preparations entered their final phases, a constellation of different cells, regional offices spread across half the globe, lit up with activity, each with designated tasks. The hub was in Afghanistan, where bin Laden's peripatetic entourage and phalanx of technicians worked out the plans and chose the teams. The cells in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, and London would handle communications and publicity. Nairobi was the key point of production and delivery. Other locations in Germany, Yemen, and elsewhere would play supporting roles. And like a team from McKinsey or Boston Consulting, a traveling group of experts would descend upon Nairobi and Dar to oversee the management of critical parts of the process. Among them, Sheikh Ahmad Salim Swedan took charge of acquiring the bomb vehicles. In Nairobi, he bought a Toyota Dyna, and in Dar es Salaam, a Nissan Atlas. Swedan oversaw modifications of the vehicles, such as having a metal frame welded onto the back of the Nissan to hold the bomb. In both purchases, he handed over the money immediately, but never showed again to complete paperwork. Abdul Rahman, an Egyptian with long experience in Afghanistan and Somalia, was bomb maker in chief. He handled the parallel processes in Nairobi and Dar of assembling large quantities of dynamite, which were ground into a powder and repacked in large crates. In the Dar es Salaam bomb, oxygen tanks were tied to the device to provide fragmentation, shrapnel that could kill more people. While in Nairobi, aluminum was used to enhance the blast. The charge to detonate the explosives would come from heavy-duty batteries for truck lights. Abdul Rahman made certain that the wiring was done correctly, through holes drilled in the back wall of a cab to a button on the dashboard. After the publication of the fatwa, the operatives who would deliver the bombs were also chosen. These would be suicide attacks, or, in the parlance of the group, martyrdom operations. Men would drive the vehicles carrying the bombs to the targets, getting as close as they could, and then hit the detonator. In Dar es Salaam, two men would drive from the bomb factory, House 213 in Ilala District, but the passenger would get out after a short distance and return to the house to clean up the evidence. In Nairobi, both men in the truck would drive all the way to the embassy. When they got there, the passenger would jump out and throw homemade flash grenades at the guards at the gate. Once the guards had fled or been killed, the passenger would raise the drop gate so the vehicle could pull up alongside the building. The future martyrs were chosen from the ranks of the training camps. Mohammed Al-Uhwali, a Saudi from a wealthy family, came to Afghanistan in 1996 and studied explosives and the use of various weapons in the camps. He had excelled and been presented more than once to bin Laden. Once he asked the Saudi for a jihad mission, but never heard anything further. Around March 1998, another Saudi in the Afghan camps, one Azam, approached al-Awhali and asked him if he was still interested in a mission. He said that he was. The two were sent to a facility outside of Kabul for an additional month's training. Afterward, they were ordered to Yemen to lie low for a while. In the summer, they were recalled to Afghanistan and informed about the details of the operation. They made videotapes, farewell statements about their dedication to the cause of jihad, and flew from Pakistan to Kenya at the beginning of August. Less is known about the Dar es Salaam driver, an Egyptian named Hamdam Khalif Alal. He was called Ahmed the German because of his fair hair, except that he had been a trainer in one of the camps and turned up in the Tanzanian capital at the beginning of August. On August 7, 1998, the 8th anniversary of the arrival of American troops in Saudi Arabia, where they were sent to aid in the defense of the kingdom against Iraq, the execution of the plot went almost exactly as planned. Before the trucks even left the bomb factories, the press rollout of the event began, as the Al-Qaeda cell in Azerbaijan faxed a draft claim of responsibility to London for the cell there to distribute. Just after 10:30 in the morning, al-Awhali and Azam drove into the back parking lot of the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi. Al-Awhali jumped out of the cab of the pickup and threw his grenades, but the guards held their ground. Azam started firing a gun out the window of the vehicle. Al-Awhali was supposed to stay near the truck, but he decided that he had performed his task and that to stay would not be martyrdom but suicide, so he turned and ran. Azam detonated the bomb at 10:35. In Dar es Salaam, Ahmed the German did the same 4 minutes later. For the terrorists, it was a triumph of management and just-in-time production. No one had ever managed a double truck bombing in which the targets were separated by hundreds of miles. Al-Qaeda did not kill as many Americans as it hoped to. 12 died in Nairobi, none in Dar es Salaam. But the group achieved the dramatic overall boost in productivity it had sought, killing 213 in Kenya and 11 in Tanzania, and wounding roughly 5,000 in the two capitals. Bin Laden has shown himself to be every bit as much a figure of the era of globalization as Davos Man.